Zojri, Craig Mishler, OG, Anchorage, Gwatsun, Ihli, Shoncha, Zashoncha. My name is Craig Mishler from Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm happy to be here today. And I want to talk to you about a subject that has become dear to me, kind of an accidental subject, because about, I guess it was 1989, Kenneth Frank, whom you may have heard just a few minutes ago, and I were up at his house in Arctic Village with a photographer named Bert Gildart one night, and I think we were eating caribou meat, and Kenneth began to talk about the stomachs, and turns out that Bert had probably good knowledge about the four stomachs of the caribou, and Kenneth began to talk about the Quechin names for those. And I took a few notes, and then a few years later, this came back up again, and it came up again, and came up again, and I began to realize that Kenneth's knowledge was very systematic, that it's just not just a few words of vocabulary, but a systematic and scientific knowledge of the caribou anatomy. And the more I learned, the more intrigued I became, and we finally put in for an NSF funded a proposal, and we got sponsored by the Alaska Native Language Center. And here we are today. This is the third year of our project, and we're coming to a close, and we want to begin sharing the data that we've collected. And I'm going to talk to you primarily about figurative language that's related to the body parts of the caribou. And for me, it all started in a very small private cabin up on the east fork of the Chandelier. And there's a place called Gold Camp. And I got to meet Johnny and Sarah Frank, Frank's grandparents. And they treated me very warmly and hospitably. And I realized the importance of my visit because Robert McKinnon, an ethnographer from Dartmouth College, went to see them in 1933, and he wrote an ethnography of the Quechin that's a classic today, and a lot of his data came from Johnny Frank. So I was just thrilled in 1972 to find out he was still alive and well. And these are pretty amazing people. When I met them, Johnny was about 93 and Sarah was 85, and they were living alone up on the river about 25 or 30 miles from the nearest village, still living off the land. And I spent 3 days with Johnny recording stories, and then fortunately other people heard about him and came and recorded him, and in about 3 years, he had passed on, and began to work with Sarah, and finally we got an NEH grant to process and transcribe and translate their stories. So we now have two books that came from them, the Narahin Chick, which Kenneth worked on with me, and these are collaborative projects. And then just last year, Dr. Mike Holloway, who began visiting the Franks at Gold Camp 10 years before I did, finally has put his book together called Dreaming Bears. And so that one is brand new. And ours has been out about 8 years, and it's in its second edition. It has a CD inside the back cover that allows you to read the stories and hear them at the same time in Quechin. And visiting the Franks really has changed my life. I think that's a major reason I'm here talking today about Quechin language. This is just a map showing a little bit about the Quechin homeland, where it is. It's in northeast, the far northeast corner of Alaska, and the northwest part of the Yukon Territory, and the little bit of the northwest part of the Northwest Territories. And You can see that the range of the porcupine caribou herd is almost contiguous with the Quechan homeland. Only a few Quechan communities lie outside this circle. These are all Quechan communities. And over here, Seagate Chic and Nubik. But those communities have a different adaptation. They're more adapted to fish and moose and other mammals than the people inside the loop here, who are highly dependent on caribou for their subsistence and their culture. This is a picture of a caribou that my daughter shot about 3 years ago. And we call this Vatsai. Caribou is Vatsai, and Nara'a is butchering. And my daughter's first caribou, she didn't quite butcher it the way it should be done. I asked her how long it took her to do this, and she said, oh, about 4 hours. And I asked Kenneth, how long does it take you to butcher caribou? He said, oh, maybe 20 minutes. So you can see experience of a few thousand years of caribou harvesting can do for efficiency. Another thing that she did, my daughter did not do, is cut the throat of the caribou, and that causes it to regurgitate its stomach contents, and that in turn spoils the flavor and taste of the tongue and the mouth parts, which are very edible and very flavorful. But if it is stained with the stomach contents, it spoils the meat and the taste of the lot of the membranes in the head. Another thing she did by mistake was she punctured the rumen stomach, the large stomach, and that accounts for this large spill area here. And the Quechan are very careful not to puncture that and create this this sort of dam of effluent here. But anyway, I still like this slide, even though it wasn't a Quechan hunter slide. It's a it exposes a lot of the internal organs, and what one of my working thesis is that the internal organs and bones of the caribou are actually a microcosm of Quechan language and culture. And by going inside the animal, you find out all kinds of things that you never knew and that the biologists haven't touched. Oh, I'm going to just concentrate here on figurative language. The picture you see in the lower left are the kidneys of the caribou, known as chatro. And what has happened in the course of oral tradition is that these have become a metaphor for galloping dogs. They say chatro ah-ah, and that means a dog. I think the analogy is that when the dogs are running at full speed, their backs are curved, mm-hmm. and something like the way the curvature on the kidneys. And one of the nice things too is that the Quechan have their own name for metaphor, Gwigwi'i Ginjik, that's what it's called. And this is another fascinating metaphor. It's actually a double metaphor. The Chicky Drew is also known in English as the first rib. It's the front, very most front rib of the animal. And with all the meat taken off of it, it looks something like the center picture. And then maybe by coincidence, maybe not, it's also the name for the northern hawk owl, the Chicky Drew, and it's also the name for a hunting device that you see in the lower left corner, made of wood and with a couple of bird feathers attached to it. And that particular device is used for hunting hares. And when a hunter would go hunting for hares and he would see one running, he would take this, I don't know what you would call it in English, but you take the chickadee and throw it, and I think when it's traveling through the air, the feathers make a whirring sound, and it fools the hare into, the snowshoe hare into thinking that it's a northern hawk owl, and the hare then dives into the snow, and the hunter can run up and stomp on it with his snowshoes and then kill it. And so you have three things here. I call it a double metaphor. And also we're finding that certain bones in the anatomy of the caribou are related to persons. This is a man named Daniel John from Fort Yukon that I met in 1973. He was a fabulous traditional singer, and also a man who led a very hard life and was known for his stubbornness. And the bone that you see on the left is the atlas. It's the swivel bone in the caribou's neck that allows it to turn. And one of the things that the Pwich'in want to do when they first kill a caribou is they want to sever that neck bone and then cut the head off so that the stomach contents again don't regurgitate. This does not happen, by the way, for moose, only for caribou. And if you make your incision with a knife on the far side there, it cuts very quickly. But if you make your incision on this side, the tendons and the cartilage will give you so much resistance that you'll be doing this for about 20 minutes to get it through. So that's one little bit of knowledge, traditional knowledge, that allows people to butcher caribou quickly. And there's a connection here between Daniel John. He served a lot of time in jail and was known for being a hard-nosed man, and but he had a very soft side to him, as I found out when he sang for me. Then Kenneth and I did some field work in Old Crow, Yukon, a couple summers ago, and as we were coming back, we were driving back from Whitehorse to Fairbanks, and we were coming through the Yukon, and I started to ask Kenneth, is there any way that you use caribou body parts to talk about the whole animal? And right away he came up with Chichitruchgincha, that is, the antlers are like brush, and I realized I had a simile on my hands. And then he went further and said, "Chiji trust cut go any." Caribou antlers are brush. And then he talked another. We kept talking. And I actually pulled the car off the road to take notes for this because it came up in conversation. I didn't want to lose it. And then we have Chichi Kat De Hat Yayacha, which is antlers cover the entire area, in which case we have synecdoche and metonymy. So here I'm finding that this is not just true only with antlers, but also with skins. So they could say Dajo cha cut de ha cha also. The caribou skins are covering the whole area. The part represents the whole. And here you are, Dajo cha cut de ha cha. So I'm finding that, you know, the people didn't just stop with the naming of the body parts, they began to imagine things in a creative and poetic way that is really, to me, uplifting and inspiring. And then we have Chitseju. This is the caul fat that goes around the body, the internal stomach. The four stomachs are surrounded with this particular fat that is kind of lace-like, and this also turns out is the same name for the high cirrus clouds that you see in the lower right. And when they look up at the sky, they see this. And then we have, I should go back here. There's a man, character in Quechin storytelling named Visagitsuk, and there's a whole cycle of stories. If you want to find out some of those stories, they're included in the Neverhin Jik book that we published. And it turns out, I don't have time to tell the whole story, but it turns out that Visagitsuk had killed a moose, and he took the caul fat and decided to make a scarf out of it. And then he took the reticulum stomach, the Chitegwat, and that became Visagitsuk Vitse. That's his Visagitsuk's hat, you can imagine. These are, when the caribou is butchered, these are a lot of the internal organs that are kind of slippery and hard to handle. This makes a convenient pouch for carrying them back to camp or back home. And so this is known as Visagitsuk Vitse, his hat. And then there's also the Chutthul, which is the Visagitsuk's belt, which is the large intestine. And I think there's four of them all together. But anyway, I wanted to talk too again about these same bones that Kenneth was talking about. The Chungwell is essentially the cannon bones in the caribou leg, the lower leg. And the metacarpal is known as the Chando Nagwal. And the metatarsal is the Chidrit, as Kenneth was talking about. And it turns out that sometimes the people, you've heard the expression, you are what you eat. In this case, people in the Arctic village have become identified with the Chungwal. So someone in Fort Yukon had said when Arctic village people came down to trade or visit in Fort Yukon, below, about 200 miles away, which was a regular thing in the old days for trade, Chungwal Nai Ada. And what they mean is these joints, which include the bone and the skin and the tendons on meat on them, and the marrow inside, they call that Chungwal, that the cannon bones are coming. That's what it translates. That's a gloss. So here you have personification, and then this is the Chidreda Quaitra, which Kenneth showed earlier, made from those Chungwal skin. And then another fascinating dimension is the names, personal names of many Quechin. We have Chichi-Ongta, holding antlers, Chichi-Na-In, looking at antlers. A man named David Henry, he was known as David Chije, named for bone marrow. David Henry Jr. is Chise-Tsul, little bone marrow. And Lincoln Tritt was known as Chigin, and it's the foreleg. So it goes on down here, and we have second to last is Dreju, Kenneth's name, and also his great-grandfather's name. And quite an impressive list here. But I'm running short on time, so I want to introduce some of the elders that we've been working with. So Hannah Solomon, Fort Yukon. This is our bibliography. It's all oral. And Simon Francis from Fort Yukon, Kenneth interviewing him in Quechin. And John Tritt from Venati. And Trimble Gilbert from Arctic Village, traditional chief now in the Tanana Chiefs Conference. And Maggie Roberts, the late Maggie Roberts, who died, we lost her about a year ago. And Kenneth was showing pictures of her that we were processing the skin. And Robert Frank, who took me to Gold Camp in 1972. MacArthur Trip, Venati, and Florence Newman from Arctic Village in Fairbanks, and Robert Bruce Jr. from Old Crow, Dick Newcon from Old Crow, originally Han Quichin from Eagle, and Peter Josie from Old Crow, who had a very expressive way of speaking. And this is our little group. Only one of these people is not here today, and that's Alan Hayton on the left. He's now acting, and he's playing Oberon in Midsummer Night's Dream. He's a Shakespearean actor, very talented. And Crystal Frank, whom you'll hear next, Kenneth and myself. And this is in front of Kenneth's cabin in Arctic Village a couple years ago. And this is my last slide. I'd like you to visit our webpage, explore more of what we are trying to do with the language. Nasi Cho. Sorry, I can give you my name and number.
Okay, I was just trying to get that web page.
Oh. Maybe you could put the slide up again
yeah.
for the website.
Let's see.
Questions?
Questions or comments?
Yeah,
I had a comment. Thank you for showing us this picture of Dick Newcon. I worked with him a little bit several years ago, and I was wondering if he was still alive.
I believe so, but he has dementia.
Oh.
So we were. I was very hesitant to work with him because of that, and we did do a little work, and he seemed to have a specialized knowledge about the caribou hoof and the specialized knowledge of the feet. Here
thank
it is.
You.
Uh-huh. Does that help? Okay.
Other questions?
In this website, we have those diagrams like Kenneth was showing of all the skeleton, with all the bone names, and then we have another slide with the English and scientific names. And you can go back and forth, or you can print them out and compare them. And then we have some texts, Quichin texts, that have been transcribed and translated. And we also have the audio for those texts, so you can listen and read at the same time, which is cool. And we have a place where you can submit comments or stories or questions. It's interactive.
Question?
We do have some. Kenneth and Caroline both did some documentation on that right after a kill in Dachanle, I guess that's where you were. We haven't decided whether we're going to post that or not, but it's there. We have it. Yeah. And I want to recognize Caroline Frank. Please stand. She's the latest member of our team. Just started working with us this summer. And she has a poster out here. She'll be there again tomorrow, 12:30, I think, I hope, to answer questions.
I was just wondering if you could say a little bit more about production of Midsummer Night's Dream that Alan is in because of the language component.
Yeah, okay. Alan, this is Alan's second Shakespearean play in which he wrote or rewrote the Shakespearean lines in Quichin. So when you go to hear this performance, and they are on tour this spring.
They are on tour right now.
Uh-huh. I think they just opened at Toke yesterday.
And they were in Glen Allen next, yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And he's written part of the script in Quichin, and he previously did King Lear and starred as King Lear, speaking almost entirely in Quichin. This one, I think, there's got some I've got some Tlingit and some Yupik in it.
Yes, a Tlingit and Yupik as well.
Yeah. So taking classic English literature and making it culturally relevant. So he's a very creative person. We're lucky to have him. Any other comments or questions? Everybody have this down? Okay.
Just leave it up.
Still a little bit of time for our discussion.
This might be a preview of Tony Woodbury's plenary address when he talks about verbal art, but I got introduced to this from Joel Schertzer in the University of Texas at Austin when I was a graduate student. I took a course in verbal art, and it opened my eyes to a lot of things. And it helps to have a literary background to be, you know, to study poetry. But to me, this is so exciting because these people are not school poets, they're not university graduates, they're not poet laureates, but they're subsistence hunters, and they're still using this figurative, imaginative language in a very creative and playful way. So I get inspired by it. Well, thank you.
Thank you.